Hello, listeners. At the start of the last show, I made some vague references to an incident that occurred to us, and now I can elaborate. Here is an official statement we made through Pulp and Deckel's social media. Let us start by saying that every human, cat, and chicken on our property is fine. At 1 a.m. on Wednesday, August 9th, we are awoken by the sound of someone knocking down our front door. When dashing out of bed to investigate, we saw a wall of flame outside our upstairs window. There was a fire right next to our house. A fire crew was trying to get us out. Thanks to the quick work of the fire response teams, the fire was extinguished before it did serious damage to our home. From what we understand, an unidentified individual started a fire in the dumpster of the business next to our driveway. The fire reached our 30-foot-tall arborvita trees that line our driveway for privacy, and they went up instantly. After the fire was out, we were allowed to return to our home, where we were able to assess the damage. All the arborvita burned, and both our personal car and the Pulpmobile truck had their sides closest to the fire melted away. So many things could have gone differently that night. All in all, it was the best possible result of a terrifying incident. We are working with insurance and hope to have repairs started soon. We personally are still working out our emotions about the incident. Please be patient with us as we sift through the rubble, both physical and mental. Thank you all for your continued support. We do have a crowdfunding campaign active. We're asking for financial help to allow us to take the time we need to deal with the aftermath without worrying about working 40 hours a week and staying on top of bills. You can find that campaign at gofundme.com/2x8wtu-the-gift-of-time. That is gofundme.com/2x8wtu-the-gift-of-time. Hello, this is Gary, and this is I'll Have a Beer and Talk, a show that I do because I like to talk about beer and interesting technological stories I read on the internet and give anyone a chance to listen to my beer-fueled insights. This will be, according to my erratic numbering system, my 97th full-length podcast. Seems like the closer I get to 100, the more pushback I seem to be experiencing. Weird. Fires, eclipses, floods, anxiety attacks. What is going on? I do not know. I will get to episode 100, though. Never give up. Never surrender. I have the randomizer armed and ready to choose a beer for me to verbally share with you, so allow me to let it loose. And there it goes. Look out. Hide your things. Beers, I guess. Thank you, randomizer. I have Fulton Brewing Company's Worthy Adversary, a 9.5% ABV Russian Imperial Stout. Russian Imperial Stouts are to be considered the king of the stouts, according to BeerAdvocate.com. They are relatively mildly carbonated, highly alcoholic stouts with profound roasty, chocolatey, and burnt malt flavors. Russian Imperials were inspired by brewers' attempts in the 1800s to catch the Russian Tsar's attention, hence the Russian part of the name there. Will it impress a Yankee such as myself? Let's find out and switch to the beer mic. Oh, man, it smells like a chocolate cake fresh from the oven. Mmm, nice and moist and chocolatey. It is pitch black with a tan head, and I need to know if this tastes like a moist chocolate cake. Oh, it is chocolatey and moist and has, like, these toffee notes, and I can feel a little bit of the burnt aspect of it because a little bit of a smoky coffee kind of aftertaste, and just, wow, this is a worthy adversary. Fun fact, I have never wanted to be a fish. Until I found this story on Gizmodo. Have you ever wondered how goldfish in outdoor ponds survive their habitat freezing up in the winter? Probably not, but now you're going to be thinking about it, and I have the answer for you. They biologically produce their own internal booze in the form of ethanol to keep from freezing up. University of Oslo's Catherine Fagernes and a team of researchers from Norway and the United Kingdom decided to find out, genetically, how goldfish produce ethanol. The process begins when the goldfish are no longer in the presence of oxygen. Normally, cells get energy from breaking down sugars using oxygen, and when oxygen is depleted, cells change their energy production over to anaerobic respiration, which unfortunately produces lactic acid, which is bad news. The researchers had originally hypothesized that a group of enzymes was partially the driving force behind the internal distillery, specifically the pyruvate dehydrogenase complex of enzymes. That's easy for me to say. However, the research pointed to another enzyme that shows up in low oxygen environments, one by the name of pyruvate decarboxylase. Decarbo is very similar to an enzyme in, you guessed it, brewer's yeast. Decarbo makes sure that the ethanol gets released only through fermentation and not in acid form. Through DNA sequencing, the researchers also believe they know how goldfish came upon such an amazing trick. A mutation occurred somewhere along their evolutionary path that produced too much genetic material, effectively doubling some DNA sequences, allowing one of the duplicate sequences to become something similar to yeast. I kind of wish I had that mutation. Saved me a lot of money. So I'm guessing you're now asking, do the fish get drunk when they're doing this? Study co-author Michael Barenbrink from the University of Liverpool doesn't really think so. Under the ice, they try to minimize the energy expenditure. In a way, the behavior changes because they're just sitting there. We can't really distinguish if that's from the alcohol or the survival strategy. So maybe they're getting drunk off their own hooch. I know when I've had one too many, I tend not to move around a lot. So, yeah. Speaking of drunk fish, research involving getting zebrafish high could lead to effective treatments in humans for opioid addiction, according to The Verge. Research into zebrafish behavior when exposed to opioids was published on the journal Behavioral Brain Research. The research's purpose was to study the underlying biological pathways that cause zebrafish to seek out drugs, even when it puts their lives at risk. So getting zebrafish high. Why? Because zebrafish and humans are actually quite similar. They share 80% of the same genes, and we also have the same opioid receptors and neurotransmitters. Thought you were the only creature that can produce dopamine? Surprise! Zebrafish can too! By studying why zebrafish kill themselves with drugs, a way may be found to prevent humans from doing the same thing. Zebrafish also reproduce very quickly. A single female fish can produce 200 eggs a day. Whew. So it's easy to always have scores of fish on hand for experiments, and it's also easy to see genetic mutations across generations while studying drug interactions. Zebrafish also have transparent brains, which makes studying their neurology pretty easy. I've met some people that I think have transparent brains. To effectively test intentional drug interactions, a system had to be set up to differentiate between self-administering drugs and passively receiving drugs, as it is thought that the effects of opioids can be affected by that distinction. A special tank was set up for the lucky zebrafish, in which there were two platforms, one white near the bottom and one yellow, which was near the surface. This is significant, as zebrafish don't like hanging out in shallow water so as not to be snatched up by predators. When the fish swam near the white platform, nothing would happen. But if they swam near the yellow platform, a small dose of hydrocodone would be injected into the surrounding water. Fun. A continuous filter system was active in the tank so the hydrocodone wouldn't stay present in the water unless fish were hanging out in the yellow zone. The fish were allowed to swim in the fun tank for 50 minutes a day for 5 days while a camera recorded how they interacted with it. On the first day, the fish swam all over the place, but by the fifth day, the zebrafish only swam in the water around the yellow platform. Big surprise. Now, having a way of measuring addictive behavior in zebrafish, the researchers now have a way of testing drugs to counteract that addiction. If the drug works, the zebrafish won't feel the need to stick around the hydrocodone waters by the yellow platform. If a particular drug works in breaking the opioid addiction, it will probably work in humans as well. You know, I never knew fish were such luscious. One of my life's dreams is to, one day, live on the moon. But in order for me to live, well, anywhere, not just the moon, I need high-speed internet access. I'm talking minimum 60 down, 10 up, wireless preferred. Well, it just so happens that a startup called Part-Time Scientists intend to set up a cellular data LTE tower on the moon, according to Slashgear. They intend this lunar LTE network to be used by lunar rovers to communicate data to towers, which would then transmit the data to a base station that would communicate with the Earth, instead of having each individual rover attempting to communicate directly with that old Earth. The part-time scientists have already cemented a deal with SpaceX to bring their spacecraft, called Alina, to space. From there, Alina will travel to the moon, make a soft landing, hopefully, and deploy two Audi Lunar Quadro Rovers. Part-time scientists also made a deal with British telecommunications company Vodafone to incorporate their LTE technology into the spacecraft and the rovers. Alina will act as the base station, receiving communications via lunar LTE from the two rovers and retransmit it back to Earth. This test LTE network is only temporary, but part-time scientists anticipate that, based on its performance, this may be a model for a permanent wireless network on the moon. Think of the roaming charges, but, well, at least I can look at lolcats on the moon. This show is sponsored by a little business that does something almost 100% completely different from getting fish drunk and dealing in wireless moon data. I'm talking about a handmade paper-making studio by the name of Pulp and Deckel. Pulp and Deckel is Portland's only community handmade paper-making studio, and its mission is to keep the art of paper-making alive with workshops, demonstrations, and by creating and selling beautiful handmade paper products. Browse the rotating selection of papermaking workshops, check out membership options, inquire about custom orders, take an online recycled papermaking class, and check out all the amazing things we do with the art of papermaking by visiting pulpanddeckel.com. That is pulpanddeckel.com. Mention I'll have a beer and talk, and we might give you something special. I don't know about you, but when my personal mobile internet device runs out of battery power, I cry. There's no shame in it. Boys do cry. What would you say if I told you that in the future, crying because you can't see lolcats on demand due to a dead battery might actually bring your battery back to life? It just might be true, and I read about it on The Verge. As revealed in the journal Chem, which you know is hip because they're too cool to say the full word chemistry, scientists at Fudan University in China have developed flexible batteries that run on salt water. And salt water is very similar to some of your very own body fluids, such as blood, sweat, and yes, tears. The batteries have been designed with external and internal wearables in mind. They can be folded in half 100 times and run on mostly harmless liquids, such as salt water and IV rehydration solutions. In case you don't remember grade school science class, batteries store electrical energy as chemical energy. There are three basic components: a positively charged metal electrode, a negatively charged metal electrode, and a liquid or paste electrolyte in between that allows ions to move from one electrode to the other, shedding electrons along the way. To put it simply, this is what creates the electricity that you use. Electrolytes are usually made from toxic chemicals or strong acids, which are fine for mechanical uses, but you don't want any of that stuff on or in your body. The scientists developed two batteries, one that resembles a strip of tape, which is actually a flat electrode-electrolyte-electrode sandwich, and another made from two minuscule carbon nanotube threads. One thread has specks of positively charged electrode incorporated within, and its pair is the opposite, embedded with specks of negatively charged electrodes. The two threads are wrapped in a tiny hollow tube filled with an electrolyte. This tubular thread-like battery was designed to be sewn into garments. The scientists then experimented with a couple different electrolyte solutions. The one that worked the best was sodium sulfate, but that has an unfortunate alternate use inside the body. It's a laxative. But they discovered that saline solutions worked almost as well, which is great. If I had an internal device powered by a battery, if it ever leaked, I'd rather be powered by saline than by a laxative. I wonder if beer could serve an electrolyte. Then I could be like a human battery. An inevitable fact is that we are all mortal. Despite our ingenuity, we humans will eventually expire. I am an atheist, so I have no need for a religious service to be performed for that date far, far into the future when I do go to that undiscovered country, but I understand the emotional needs of others to do something to celebrate my life. So that's why I'm totally going to request that a robot perform a Buddhist funeral for me, hopefully while playing a bagpipe cover of I'm Walking on Sunshine. Because that's totally a thing you can do right now, according to Engadget. As revealed at the awesome-sounding Life Ending Industry Expo in Tokyo, Japan, Aldebaran demoed one of its pepper humanoid robots, clothed in religious robes, chanting sutras while tapping a drum, recreating a Buddhist funeral ceremony. For a mere 50,000 yen, which is about 450 American dollars, you too could have a robot officiate a funeral, instead of paying a human to do it for 240,000 yen, which is about 2,200 US dollars. Now, this may seem ridiculous, but the concept is accepting a reality that is going on right now. Japan's population is shrinking and aging. human Buddhist priests aren't getting as much monetary support from their dwindling communities, and with people living longer, funerals don't happen on a regular enough basis to provide a stable income. The priests have had to find work away from their temples, so when funerals do come up, the priests are often unavailable. It may seem morbid, but this is a growing issue in Japan. The population is aging, and reproduction has slowed, so they have turned more and more to robotics to care for the elderly and to attend to their needs. This was discussed on my favorite tech news podcast, the Daily Tech News Show with Tom Merritt, and they pointed out that yes, you might find the idea silly, maybe even insulting, but it may be totally fine with, and even desired, by individuals thinking about the natural end of their days. Individuals like me. I read about 100 different technology blogs on a fairly regular basis. It's actually a leisure for me. I like seeing how humanity strives to make things better for all. Most of the time. A lot of the time, our ingenuity creates, well, silly things. I noticed a lot of those silly stories involve fast food companies using consumer-level technology to create mostly desirable gadgets or hooks to get people to throw money at them in exchange for their convenient comfort foods. I see it so often, and like to talk about it so often, I created a semi-regular show segment about it called Pizza Tech. And I ran across two Pizza Tech stories this week that I just have to make sure that you know about. First up, heard of cryptocurrency? Things like Bitcoin and Ethereum? I don't want to get into detail why they are so valuable, but they are what is called a fiat currency, a currency that has value not because of what it's made from, but because we assess the value to it, so like every other currency. Cryptocurrency is all the rage right now, so I am surprised it took this long for a fast food company to jump on that bandwagon. According to Mashable, Burger King Russia has announced their own digital currency, dubbed, what else, Whopper Coin. One burger order earns one Whopper coin, which is safely stored in a cryptocurrency wallet, which is accessed via the Russian Burger King app. Speaking to Rustbase, the chain intends to use Whopper coin like a rewards plan, allowing patrons to spend their Whopper coin on things Burger King offers, like Whoppers. They did not state how many Whopper coins it would take to purchase one Whopper. So, Whopper coin is more like a loyalty card than a cryptocurrency. I see what you're doing there, Burger King Russia. Just trying to take advantage of all the hype around cryptocurrency. Meanwhile, back in the States, MakeUseOf.com posted a story about how KFC has decided that virtual reality is the best way to get people to think about fried chicken. And they've released an insanely disturbing game for the Oculus Rift VR headset. It is a virtual escape room game. If you are unfamiliar with escape rooms, they are themed areas in the real world in which you pay money to be locked into with friends, and you have a time limit to figure out puzzles in the room to escape before the time runs out. So like Saw, but you won't be murdered if you fail. Maybe. I've never been in an escape room, so I don't know how they work. Anyway, the game, called The Hard Way, portrays you as a new KFC employee. And as part of your training, you are trapped in a lavishly decorated room with, among other things, a chicken prep area, chicken frying equipment, a pair of robot arms hanging from the ceiling, and a gigantic portrait of Colonel Sanders. The concept of this virtual escape room is simple. The disembodied voice of Colonel Sanders orders you to inspect, rinse, and fry up chicken parts in order to complete your training, and be able to leave the training room and escape to the safety of the KFC break room. I highly suggest that you follow the story link in the show notes to watch the video, as it is really hard to explain how disturbing the whole thing is. KFC has claimed that this game may be used as an employee training course officially. I've never had a desire to work at a fast food restaurant, and the thought of having to go through a virtual escape room with the dead company founder taunting you to go through training has reinforced that decision of mine to stay away from the food industry. Far, far away. Hey, Gizmodo wants you to know that if you want to catch a lizard, you may have to flirt with it. Brianna Putman and a team of full-time scientists at UCLA wanted to see if color could influence lizard behavior to enable conservationists and other scientists to better predict animal reactions to humans coming right at them. The team focused on the male western fence lizard, which has blue patches along their abdominal and throat regions. The male fence lizard likes to show these colors off to the lady fence lizards. To see if humans wearing colors would have an effect on how the fence lizards would react to them, the team approached the lizards at two sites, one in a busy public park in L.A., and another site in a nature reserve. The lizard approachers wore one of four different color t-shirts during the trials: dark blue, light blue, gray, and red. As the humans approached the lizards wearing one of the four shirts, the distance that the lizards ran away was measured. Eventually, the approaching turned to chasing and catching to see if it was any easier or harder to catch the lizards depending on the shirt color. After about 15 trials per color, the team published the results in PLOS One, a scientific journal. It seems that if you want to catch a fence lizard, you should wear dark blue. That color team recorded lizards running the shortest distances and being the most caught out of all of the colors. Wearing a red shirt is generally a bad idea, and also resulted in lizards running far away and being difficult to catch. So lizards like Starfleet science uniforms, but hate 2260s era Starfleet engineering and security uniforms. Maybe they switched command from gold to red in the 24th century due to an increase in Gorn encounters? Deep cut. Anyway, even though this is just one preliminary study, it does seem to support the theory that lizard behavior can be affected by color. So wear red if you visit Jurassic Park. It'll make you safer. Or something. The song's been in my head since before the eclipse. Hey guys, this show is supported by Pulp and Nickel and listeners just like you. If you get value or entertainment from this show, maybe you too would like to support me. You can always hire me for some voice and audio production work. I can do voicemail messages, mediocre acting, bad singing, and some adequate audio production. If you feel you or someone you know might have a use for the best part of my body, which happens to be my voice and my brain, let me know. Email me at gary@pulpanddeckle.com. That is G-A-R-Y @PULPANDDECKLE.com. Rates are reasonable. And if you could be so kind to rate and review the show on iTunes, the more iHabat's discoverability will go up for people looking for beery tech podcasts on iTunes. Funny how that works. And you can also support the show directly with money. If you enjoy my show each week, you can donate at least $1 a month to the show at patreon.com/iHabatRadio. That is patreon.com/iHabatRadio. Go to patreon.com/iHabatRadio and become my patron. You'll be joining a very attractive and intelligent group that already support me there. Thank you very much, patron soldiers! As I mentioned at the start of this week's show, episode 100 is getting really close now, and I still haven't put much thought into doing anything special to mark the occasion, other than just by making yet another show. Do you have any ideas? Should I bring back some guests? Highlight some great segments? Play a little bit of the unaired pilot? Do you have any burning questions about the show that I haven't talked about? The suggestion box is open. And as always, please tell your family, friends, neighbors, pets, plants, aliens, drunk goldfish, and high zebrafish about the show, and that they can find it on Google Play Music, on iTunes, on Podomatic, on Stitcher, and on Spreaker. And please send me feedback, story suggestions, and beer recommendations to gary@pulpanddeckle.com, or on the Twitters and Instagram at iHabitRadio, or even on the Facebook at facebook.com/iHabitRadio. It's time for me to go. I will see you in the future. Bye-bye!